Okay,
All
cool.
right. Okay.
Cool. Well, I got to step away for just a second. I just got a phone call. I got to go tell Patty something. I'll be right back.
Fine. Okay,
Just
the
a
floor is
hey
yours,
Mac, how
Ace.
you doing, Mac? How are you doing, Mac?
Yeah, good, thanks. Yeah.
Well, we're working out all the wrinkles here, Harry.
Yeah. Well, I did warn you there would be some wrinkles to work out, and yeah, these new
I'm
forms.
not sure you warned us enough. No.
Well, these forms of government it's not like we have a manual that we can just go to and, oh yeah, this is what you do. It has to be relationally worked out, and you have to establish the how the government's going to be worked out and how the blueprint's going to be worked out. I mean, all that stuff is all part of it,
Yeah, and
because.
I think every situation is so unique as you try to, work through the different things and what we're doing. So yes, I think it's but it's good. Like you say, I think it's great. You just got to be willing to do the work.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, we had two goes at it here before we got it right. The first go, the two people just weren't really able to step up and step into it. So we then looked to establish it again, and the next time, we went through it for 3 or 4 months to get, the established relationship and get things out on the table and make sure we're able to be open and work through things. So, it is a process, and when you get a blueprint, okay, one person can look at the blueprint and they'll see this, and someone else will look at the blueprint and they'll see that, and you have to pull those things together to get an overall picture, so that you can actually see, okay, what's God saying in the blueprint? What does it mean? Okay, it's a heavenly blueprint. But what does it actually look like reflected on the earth, and how are we then for going to administrate that? And the different people in a bench of three will have different aspects that they major on. And there may be some who major on what's in the middle, and maybe some that major on what's going out. It's just finding how that works so that we can be in unity of heart, and be in one heart and mind over things, but coming from the perspectives of our different redemptive gifts and our different calls. It's not like a bench of three is a clone. It's like three people coming together to form agreement, and then three people outworking that agreement in their particular ways to then release other people to outwork the blueprint in their particular ways, so that people can be living stones in it. And that takes adjustment, because our whole form of government has very much been top down, where we tell people what to do and how to do it, and then they go on and do it. Well, this is not doing that. This is actually looking to say, this is what we're called to. How do we release people to find their place in that and to outwork their destinies in it if they're called to be part of it? And most churches won't turn people away, because they'll be like, hey, who is some more finance and here's some more resource we can have. But actually, if those people aren't called to engage and understand and outwork the blueprint, then it's pointless having them be part of something that they're not called to be, because they will not be fulfilling their destiny there. And it's real danger not to be in the place where your destiny is. So I encourage people here strongly. Look, this is where we're going. This is the journey we're on. This is the way we're going to do it. If you feel part of that journey, then fantastic. We're going to journey together and work this out together. If you're not sure about that and you don't think this is where you're going, actually, I'll really bless you to be somewhere else, to find where you can find your destiny and be able to outwork it. Because A, you'll be a pain in the neck here, because nothing will ever fit for you. And hey, someone else will be missing where you should be, because you should be giving your input into there. And we have to be really honest to be able to release people into where they should be. And we found that several people decided, no, yeah, I'm not sure we can go with this, and we just blessed them and released them, and that was great. You know, because it isn't about numbers, it's not about money, it's really about people being living stones in a blueprint that they belong in, not where they don't belong. You know, in Jacob, when he was called to go and live at Bethel, and Bethel was a mountain area where it obviously was an open heaven, and he decided to go and leave Bethel and go and live at Shechem first and move on, and he had nothing but trouble. His family had trouble, his children had trouble, everything had trouble, and his decision was motivated by finance because he was a herdsman, and you can't keep herds on a mountain. And so his motivation was, I need to go and find a place to live that can house all my herds, and he stepped out of an open heaven into a closed one, and essentially most of the problems that resulted in that outrose from that position. You know, his eldest son took his concubine, his daughter got raped, his other two sons basically committed genocide on the group who raped the daughter. It was just a mess. Why? Because they were not living in the place where their destiny was supposed to be. So we really have to encourage people to be where they're called by God and where their destiny can be at work for the present season. And sometimes there are seasons where people then move according to that as God positions them somewhere else within the world or within the body. That's fine. I think what we have to do is just make sure that we're clear on what we're calling people to do, what the blueprint is, and then we just encourage people to outwork who they are within that framework, and they begin to shape what the blueprint looks like. Because the blueprint is not a detailed plan of everything. It is a overall picture of what God is wanting us to establish. It's people who begin to shape what it looks like as the different mountains. You know, we're having that here quite a lot now because we're establishing the different seven mountains that we have authority over. And as people are now beginning to occupy the mountains and they're beginning to then form benches of three on those mountains, they're shaping what that area looks like, not us. We just release them and bless them because that is a mountain that we have governmental authority in our blueprint, and then we release people to go and occupy that mountain, and we keep our hands off it. You know, we basically encourage them, we get them to share what God is saying and doing, but we don't, as a bench of three, tell them what to do. We encourage them to seek God and to get into the heavens and to then actually multiply what we've done by forming relationship with people in three and coming into unity, finding out what their seven mountains are, and then following the whole process through again. So, you know, it is an ongoing journey, but we have to find that we're agreeing around the blueprint, because that's what the government is about. You know, the government of God is about the heavenly blueprint, so that the shadow of that on the earth can be manifested, and he will come and recognize that. You know, and so we have to work out things. That doesn't necessarily mean we always agree on everything that we see and feel, and we have different perspectives, but the blueprint has to be agreed, otherwise you've got no place to start from. And once you agree the blueprint, then you can begin to get the strategy from God and the mandates for God for then establishing that and what it means, and you can begin to call people to it, and you can do all those things. But without the blueprint, there can be no government, because the government is about the mandate that God's given in the first place. But, you know, it is a journey. You know, we certainly have found that a difficult journey, and because the enemy will oppose it with everything he's got, because he does not want to see government established on earth as it is in heaven, so he'll try and throw everything at it, which is where we have to think the best of each other. We have to make sure we don't take a personal offense, that when we share how we're feeling and someone shares how they feel, that we don't take it personally. You know, we've got to get over ourselves quite a lot. And we had to hear quite a lot, get over ourselves, because it's not about us. It's about us serving the purpose of God. And that means that stuff that threatened me and things, I had to take my hands off. And when people weren't doing things the way I did them, and some of them weren't doing them as well as I could have done them, I had to actually say, no, it's up to them they're the people doing it. I'm going to bless them. I'm not going to even tell them if they're not doing it the way I would do it. I'm just going to encourage them the way they should do it. Now, that took me some time. To start with, I was desperate to say, well, I can just, well, how about this or how about that? And in the end, I just, no, I have to allow them to outwork that in the way that they're called to do it. Providing them the foundation in which they can build and release it, giving them whatever wisdom they need and whatever support they need to do that, but not doing it for them, and help releasing them to make mistakes. And actually to learn from those mistakes, just as I've learned from the mistakes I've made. You know, it's only if we don't learn from them that we get to repeat them. If we learn from them, we won't make them again. You know, and we have to have an environment where a culture of honor is there, that if mistakes are made or things are done and they think, okay, was that the right thing? Did we get it right? I've often found that God takes us on a journey which is not a straight line. And so he will take us over to a place that sometimes doesn't seem right. And when you look back, think, well, how do we get there? That's the only place we could go to get to the next place, because you couldn't go in a straight line. And so we have to be willing to go on a journey together and embrace each other in that way and encourage each other to do it. But it is a journey, and it is a process without a doubt. Anyway. Who's got something else they want to talk about?
Well, if nobody else does, I always have my list. So, Andra, did you have something you wanted to ask? Your mic, your mute's on. You're on mute.
Thank you. Sorry. I have one thing on that topic. It seems like the blueprint would work for a business as well. Does that work for business, family, all the other structures?
Yeah, because God has a purpose for my life. There's a blueprint for my life. So that we would call it a scroll or a destiny scroll, but it's a blueprint for my life. And when I begin to engage in that, I'm looking for a bench of three in me to agree with my scroll, which means body, soul, and spirit coming into alignment in me, in unity and oneness, to agree and outwork my scroll, because I can't do it without all three of me in agreement. My spirit saying, yes, we can do this. If my body doesn't walk over there and do it, I'm not going to get too far. So I need that in my own life, and you can have that for a ministry, you can have that for a business. You know, if there's a kingdom business that God is establishing, and he's establishing entrepreneurship or ways of doing things in an innovative way, absolutely, these blueprints can be released, and government can be established to see the fullness of that released. You know, so it's a key is knowing what is the blueprint that God has given for our lives and for anything that we have. Because why would we want to do something that God hasn't directed us or authorized us or given us a pattern to follow? In other words, we're on our own, aren't we? It's like, well, what should I be doing? Well, I don't know. I'll do my best. Well, I've tried that a lot, you know, and sometimes it's sort of okay, and most of the times it really isn't. So I've given up doing that and just asked God, you know, where does this tie in with my blueprint? How does it tie in with my destiny? And the more I spend time in his presence and engage with him around the ark, the more my heart is unveiled, and he writes the revelation of that blueprint on my heart, and my desires turn towards it. You know, sometimes it's like I just get drawn towards that because my heart is just become good ground for God to outwork it in. So, yeah.
Is that the same as purpose? When I think there's a lot of different terminology. There's purpose, like your personal purpose or business purpose. Is that similar to, how does that fit into the blueprint? Or is that similar or to your destiny, your calling? There's all those terminologies that the same. Seems like they overlap.
Same. I mean, in a sense, your blueprint or your scroll or your destiny will have seven spheres of government attached to it, and you need to see and bring that government through you as the mountain of authority that God has released to administer that. So you may have family as part of that blueprint. You may have business as part of that blueprint. You may have all sorts of things as part of that blueprint. Ministry, gifts, various things that could be part of your blueprint. That as you accept that authority and responsibility for outworking that, you will then seek God for the strategies to deliver those things that he's called you to do. You know, I mean, we have a general overall purpose, which is to bring glory to God, but we have very specific things that have agreed with our spirit before the foundation of the world. You know, in eternity, Psalm 139, God saw our unformed substance, which was the thoughts he had about us in his heart, and then he then agreed with us in that unformed substance what that destiny would be. It's just when we get our spirit comes into our human cells that form, they're separated from God because of the nature that we're born into, sin and iniquity. So they're disconnected from that. But it was all agreed, and once we get born again and we get another strand of DNA and the light and creative light of our spirit then begins to engage our soul and body, then the whole purpose then is to bring us back to what was already agreed. But we have to do it in relationship, the same way Adam and Eve were called to do it, by walking with God in relationship, so that we can outwork our destiny, not for relationship, but out of relationship. Because everything done in the world is usually done for something, whereas in the kingdom, it's done with God and out of who we really are, which is why we need to discover our identity and who God called us to be, so that we can begin to outwork that rather than desperately always looking for it from what we do. And that's where a lot of people struggle. They get their identity from what they're doing. And so when what they're doing changes or what they're doing in the kingdom is threatened, then they will defend that because that's what my identity is. And we all have seasons in our life where we go and do different things. When you're a parent and you have children all around you, then you are responsible for them in a particular way, and you outwork that in that parenting. When they all leave home, you're no longer a parent in the same way. And if your identity is all got from being a parent, then a lot of people, it's like empty nest syndrome. It's like, well, now what am I supposed to do? Who am I? I thought I've been this all my life with our children. Now they've gone. Who am I? We need to see from the beginning that being a parent is just part of our mandate and actually not who we are, and we don't get our identity from it. It's our identity to be good parents, but we don't get our identity from being a parent. And there's a huge difference. And the way in which we treat those things will be determined by how much our soul is dependent on receiving the affirmation or bring it esteem and value and worth. All that stuff should be coming from God. You know, there should be no self attached to worth and esteem. Because when we attach self, self-esteem, self-worth, then we're looking to provide that ourselves. And the only source of that, when we provide it ourselves, is the world, and we get messed up by drawing that from the world. So if we get our esteem and our value and our worth from God and in relationship with him, then we're not looking for it from anywhere else. And therefore, we're secure and we know who we are. And then we can come out of that just to be who we are and demonstrate that. So it's a whole different understanding, really, that once you know your identity and, of course, attached to your identity is your destiny, then it's just natural. And the more time I spend with God, the more that destiny seems to get revealed and my heart draws me towards it. Because I just want the things that he wants, and he wants the things that he agreed and saw. All those vast sum of the thoughts he has about me, according to Psalm 139, I want to know them. I want to know how he thinks. And when I begin then to think how he thinks, my mind is renewed. You know, even renewing the mind is not a process of trying to believe the truth. It's engaging with the truth as a person and then starting to understand how he thinks about us, and then we begin to think like that which we behold and we listen to and we engage with. You know, a lot of people try and renew their mind as a process of will and by confession of, well, I am confessing I'm this, to try and believe it. And there's a part to play in meditating in the Word and allowing what God says in the Word to impact us, but it's not about trying to do that in our own way. It's do it in relationship so that when I know His thoughts about me, that is who I really am. And it just makes total sense. But certainly as to me, whenever God has revealed something, it's just like, that just feels me. You know, and a lot of people are like, well, who am I? And what am I, what am I here? And what's life about? Because they've never really connected with their eternal destiny in the heart of God and had that revealed so that they can follow it, you know. So it is a bit of a journey that we're on, but so, yeah.
Thanks, Mark.
Okay.
Along the lines of that, Mike, I have a question about unity and the importance of unity. And the reason where I'm coming from in that is I had a really powerful dream a week and a half ago or so the situation was there was something going on that in our region or area, you know, something really catastrophic. And so we had gotten together as our ecclesia and we had decided to go up into heaven to see what God wanted to do about it. And we gathered together and we went into, you know, we did an activation kind of like all together. We were standing in a circle and we all went up into heaven. But somewhere in that process, something shifted and we literally went somewhere. We went into another dimension. And I had the sense that if someone would have walked in the room, we wouldn't have been there. Like our physical bodies actually trans-relocated into the realm of eternity or whatever. Yeah. In that place, we saw the heart of God of what He wanted to do, and we were so at one with it and at one with one another that it just all resonated. Well, just to keep it short, when we came back out of that, and came back down to earth, back into this realm, the situation was different. It had absolutely changed. It's as if it didn't happen. It's kind of like, you know, if you ever watched the Back to the Future movies where Marty went back in time and then he comes back and it's different. That's the way it was. It's like it hadn't even happened. But the key of it was this unity of one accord, you know, they all came together in one accord. And so I wanted to get your, well, and what was really cool about that dream, when I came out of the dream, you know, I was all excited. I wrote it down, talked to Patty about it. I went back to sleep and had the same dream again. and so it was really powerful. And so anyway, it just seemed like God was highlighting this aspect of there's something about unity. So I wanted to get your take on that.
Mm. Well, unity is not uniformity. So unity doesn't mean we have to be the same. We just have to have the same heart. And we have to come into the agreement with God's heart, because that's where true unity is. And it's oneness with Him and His heart. And when we're in oneness with Him and His heart, He releases, you know, of course it says, you know, He releases blessing, He releases favor, He does stuff on our behalf that we couldn't do ourselves, because we're in a harmonious agreement. Now, a harmony is not one note. It's a series of notes that together form a harmonious sound, because everything has its place within the sound that makes the sound just feel together. You know, if you have some sort of sounds, like syncopated sounds or jazz sort of sounds, some of them, they're not harm, they're discord. You know, there's a discordic notion with it, whereas harmony is in accord, where the different things produce a chord. Because a chord itself, if you think about it, is not one note. It's a series of three or four notes that you play together. When you play I don't know, I'm not a musician, but I don't know, CGE, I think CGE is a chord. You play those together, it just sounds, that just sounds like it was always meant to work together, and it produces this wonderful sound that things resonate with and is released. Now, God is like that all the time, because he's one. So Father, Son, and Spirit are always in accord. They may be different notes, if you like, of the chord, but they're always producing the sound that everyone says, wow, isn't that wonderful? So when we come close to God, we need to come into that sound. And so it's like we therefore need to resonate and change our frequency to align with his. And that's where real unison is. I mean, is another word you could say, unison. We sing in unison. And it's all really talking about the same thing. It's having our hearts aligned with God's heart. Now, for that to take place, sometimes our mind needs to get out of the way, because it's not a mind issue. It's a heart issue that then becomes an agreement issue. Because once I know the heart of God, my mind might not agree with it. My doctrine might not agree with it. My history might not agree with it. Everything in my experience in my life might not agree with it. But my heart says yes. And if my heart says yes in alignment with God, and I have the peace that comes from knowing that it's God, even if it's a huge step of faith or a risk thing to step out or do something new, or I'll do it because my heart knows. And then I begin to come out of that, so I change my thinking. That's where my thinking needs renewing. My mind needs renewing to align with his thoughts, which come out of his heart, because his heart contains his thoughts that have a frequency and a vibration that we can connect with and come into agreement with. So, you know, as then we do that, God does so much behind the scenes without us being aware of it, to change situations, to align things so that things in the future come together and they come out. And it's just, you think, wow, it's great when a plan comes together. Well, God has huge plans that come together all the time when we come into agreement with them. When we don't, his plans can be thwarted by our lack of agreement. You know, and it's really important that we are able, therefore, to what we do with God, that we're willing to submit to one another in our submission to God. And that's not an easy thing, because sometimes we have our own opinions and our own agendas, and we're not totally pure, and we have mixed motives, and we have things in our hearts which we're working through. But that's where the choice comes. Am I going to, in obedience to God, which is worship, bowing down and saying, you're God, I may not understand, actually my mind might be kicking against this right now, but I'm going to say yes to you. And when we do that together as a group, then we find that God will change our minds. You know, our minds will not be the thing that's driving this, it will be the heart. And that's why we can do things that seem impossible. That's why we can do things that actually our mind would say, don't do that, that is dangerous, don't go there. Because our heart says yes, because we're governed by the umpire of peace within our conscience. Because it's our conscience that should direct us, both negatively, as avoiding this, because this will not be God's heart, and embracing that, because it will be God's heart. So we need to get our conscience gate pretty much cleaned up from the past bad decisions it's made, and the hard areas, or the areas of hurt, or the areas that are defensive or wounded. All those things in our gateways are part of this process of coming into unity, both in ourselves and with others. Because it does mean, you know, sometimes I have to say, actually, I don't understand. My mind wants to do this, but I know in my heart you're right, so I'm going to submit to that. And we've done that a number of times here, because sometimes it's like I would have responded to a situation in a sense that I would have thought I'm quite justified, because, you know, this is unrighteous or unjust, therefore I can deal with this. And when I've submitted it to the two others of our three, they have tempered my reaction to that situation with some wisdom and insight, in which then I'm like, yeah, but I want to do this, but I know actually what you're saying is wisdom, and I submit to that. And that is the right course of action. I wouldn't have been wrong in doing what I did because I had the biblical backing to be able to do it. It's just, it wouldn't have been the right thing to do. And there's a difference between not doing the wrong thing and doing the right thing. You know, and I've learned to trust others to be able to give me wisdom into some of those, well, this is how we're going to handle this. You know, and it's like, and a couple of times it was like, yeah, but we're not doing anything. Surely we need to do something. Surely people are at risk because of this or this. Particularly when you get a religious or political spirit in operation, you don't want people to be damaged by it. And it's like, okay, my reaction would be, let's get rid of that religious and political spirit. You know, but the way and the course of action which was agreed in unity, because I submitted what I would have done to a wiser course of action, actually God did exactly what he needed to do to sort out the issue, and we just took our hands off it and let him do it. You know, so there's, you know, a heavenly engagement with God that brings us into a place where in an earthly situation then we can come to agreement with God and not with ourselves. You know, if you see what I'm saying. Our agreement is around what God is saying, even if that's not naturally what we would do. Because that will bring blessing. Yeah. Well, is that sort of what you're sort of saying, looking for in that?
Yeah, that was very good. Thank you, Mike. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Okie dokie. Right. You know, but I think the fact that you had two dreams is a significant thing.
Yeah.
You know, that it is a key.
Yeah.
And you'll probably find then that there's opposition to that or situations where you have to work it out to put that into practice. Because that's what happens. Yeah, yeah, we don't get stuff in theory. You know, we get the revelation that then has to be worked out, and it's the working it out. It's the great. I mean, revelation's wonderful, fantastic. I love it. But then it's, well, how does this work? That's the bit where you have to continually use the revelation as your guide as you're going forward to make sure you're following the revelation in practice. Because theoretical revelation is no better than no revelation. You know, it's got to be outworked, and that involves people. You know, and people are not always pleasant, and sometimes they're awkward, and sometimes they don't think the same, and sometimes they have different life experiences, but we have to work all that through to be able to establish the one heart, one mind issue. And we have to be willing to be honest and open with each other to be able to establish those things. And the culture of honor, which is the system that enables us to receive from each other who we are, rather than being threatened by who we are and therefore being defensive with each other, means that we have to ask each other the questions to bring the things that are we're working on into the light. And then we can work on them. Because I'll only see what I can see. I have a blind self. We all have one that requires either God or somebody else to point out. And when it is pointed out, very often our first reaction will be defensive. No, I didn't. No, that's not my motive. No, I didn't think that. But if we're willing to submit it and ask, seek God on it, then majority of times we'll realize, hey, I just did not realize I was being motivated by that. I didn't see it. Couldn't see it. It was just me. I just thought that was me. And I've been through that numerous times. You know, you can't see until you can see. So if you can't see, you're blind. And we're often blind to our own faults and our own issues because we don't know the roots of them. But when you start to pray things like, search me, O God, in other words, put a spotlight on me and show up everything in the light, you're going to see things that you never saw before. And then you have to be willing to humble ourselves and say, hey, I was wrong. That way of thinking, I totally renounce that now. I thought last week I thought that was the way it should be done, and this week I see how wrong it is. And you know, again, I've had to do that. You know, humbling ourselves is never very easy. You know, because the flesh doesn't like it. But therefore, that's why the flesh has to be dead. You know, because what happens when we humble ourselves, he will exalt us. We don't have to exalt ourselves. You know, some of the doors we have to get through to engage God are only this high. And you have to crawl through them. You know, it means we get on our knees and we come through in a low place. You know, and if you're standing tall, you'll never, maybe never even see that there's a door there to go through. You know, so sometimes we have to be on our face. You know, we call it carpet time here. And I spend quite a lot of time on the carpet. You know, particularly in worship times, it's like I find myself on my face before God. And it's like, I just want to be in that place where I am not elevating myself. I can just accept who I am. It's not that I'm a worm. It's just I'm surrendering and submitting to what God says, you know. But, you know, it's not easy. Yeah, we have this Jaharos window thing, which is sort of in our therapeutic community concepts, which is all about blind self, open self, revealed self. And, you know, there are things that we want people to know about ourselves and we're happy they know. And there are things that we know and that we're not happy for anyone else to know, because we may carry shame or guilt or condemnation. And if there's something about me that I would not be happy for someone to know, then I must be carrying something. Because if I'm already forgiven and by God, then what does it matter if someone knows? And so I tell people a lot of stuff about my life and the things I've been up to and into, because actually I'm forgiven. I carry no guilt or shame. You know, sometimes there are consequences. Sometimes you have to try and make amends for things. But in reality, you can't carry guilt or shame. That means that I'm holding something against myself that God is not holding against me. So I can't love myself in that way if I'm holding things against myself. You know, and that comes, you know, I remember, you know, I think you posted something, Peter, about Ian Clayton doing the stuff on the body and sickness in the courts, coming and saying to our body, okay, what are your accusations against me? You know, what have I put you through? You know, and the body will come up, well, you did this and you did this and you ate the wrong food and you did this and you did this and whatever. Okay, now we've got to accept the judgment that our body brings that has brought unhealthiness into our life. You know, so there's a whole load of stuff like that, which, you know, is a journey and a process to bring transformation and wholeness into us, which is not easy. You know, if it was easy, we'd all have done it. You know, it isn't easy, and it requires submission and obedience and humility and a willingness to own our stuff and not defend it. And that's not easy when you're being attacked or you think you're being attacked. Because quite often we take a defensive position when we think we're being attacked, where when someone just wants to speak the truth in love to us, we have to accept that they're going to bless us, not to damage us. Otherwise, we'll take it an offensive situation and we won't be open to what they're saying. Now, that doesn't mean that everyone's got everything right, but, you know, as I say often, there's no smoke without fire. So if there's an accusation somewhere, I guarantee either I've done something or my family line's done something in it. You know, so why am I going to argue? You know, why do I need to justify myself? Even if I haven't done anything, I very often say, look, I'm really sorry. Because, well, why not? If someone's upset or offended, I might as well say sorry even if I didn't do anything. You know, and in my situation, I can offend a lot of people unwillingly in a sense. You know, I can walk past someone on a Sunday with my mind being somewhere else, wanting to prepare, get my laptop set up for whatever I'm doing, totally ignore someone because I didn't even see them. You know, that if they're insecure, they can feel really wounded by the fact that I didn't acknowledge them, that I wasn't friendly, I didn't smile, and I never even saw them. So when they... if they're willing to come and say, look, I was really offended, you ignored me, you know, what is my reaction going to be? well, I didn't even see you. It's your problem, not mine. No, I probably would say, look, I'm really sorry. Actually, I didn't notice you, but I'm really sorry. Please forgive me. You know, so that we remove all those offenses and fences that are between us so we can be open and honest. But, you know, I'm not saying that I behave that way all the time, you know, because sometimes I don't. Sometimes I get annoyed, you know, and then I have to deal with why was I annoyed? Why did that annoy me? Why did it make me angry? Why did it wind me up? But if we're willing to use the reactions that we have as indicators of where we are in our life, then we can use each of those situations as a stepping stone to change and transformation. Or we can just defend them and stay the same. You know, it's our choice. We get free will in this. My advice in it all would be, if someone accuses you of something, actually don't dismiss it. Take it back to God and seek revelation about it. You know, and if it is their issue, then you can help them see that issue from a position of humility rather than of self-righteousness. The self-righteousness doesn't get us anywhere, you know, because we want each other to grow. You know, the reason why we want to be able to love each other and engage each other is we want each other to come into the fullness of their destiny, and we want everything that's hindering that removed. You know, so we don't deal with the person, we try and deal with the problem or the issue and address that. Because most people that I've come across do not deliberately go out of their way to upset, offend, or hurt people in the Christian community. They're usually coming out of some sort of dynamic in their own selves that they don't realize that's what's going on. We just have to get to the point where we can get those things out to be able to uncover the real reasons for what's underneath them, then help each other to grow and to be changed and transformed. It's like church seems to be the worst place for that. Because I think people have an expectation that everything should be perfect, and when it isn't, they get disappointed and disillusioned. How is it ever going to be perfect when we've got imperfect people? We have to become more like Jesus, and then things will change. But I think we sell people an illusion, really, or it has been sold as an illusion, so that when that is disillusion, okay, that illusion didn't really work, now I feel really bad, and this is horrible. And the reality is, it just was misrepresented in the first place. You know, we're all works in progress, we've all got L plates on, therefore we have to be careful around each other. You know, when I see an L plate, which we have as a learner driver, when I say L plates, we have L's plates as a red thing that puts on a car that people are learning to drive in, you don't get too close to them. You know, because they might stop unexpectedly, they may turn funnily. You're aware, actually, that there may well be some things, so I keep my eye on them. And I don't get too close up because I don't want them to be frightened that I'm right up close to them, so I'll keep my distance. They're all things that I would do because I'm aware, hey, that person is learning. Well, we're all learning. So let's have some grace for each other in the process and give each other some space and some room to get it wrong sometimes and learn. You know, and if we didn't take offense, there would be so much less problems. And the only reason for not taking offense, really, is we're not dead in that area. Mm-hmm. We're wounded by something else's offense, rather than not being. And, you know, the more dead we are, the less offense we take. Because what someone says doesn't affect me anymore. You know? And I actually don't see it as, well, they're attacking me. I just think, oh, bless them. They're going through some stuff. If we see each other as going through stuff, then we don't need to be offended by them. That rubs us up the wrong way, potentially.
That's good.
Because there's grace, you know. And love. You know, everything has to be coming out of love. You know, and love is not about what someone can do for me, it's about what I can do for them. God so loved the world he gave. You know, and for us, love needs to be expressed in giving without looking for a reward. Which, anyway, no go. Not easy, but good when you can work stuff through.
Great answer, Mike. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Okay. So, anyone else got anything else you want to talk about?
Well, if nobody else does, I will.
You're on then.
Kind of to change the subject just a little bit, and that is the issue of judgment.
Mm-hmm.
Can you kind of give a biblical or, you know, your view on what that means? I know Ian's taught about judging and talking about the dikrino and, you know, the discerning versus actually, you know, like a punishment.
Yeah. Well, I think that's probably your key issue. Judgment isn't punishment. Judgment is a decision made to bring, like, when a judge makes a decision, it's guilty or not guilty. That's not punishment. There may be consequences that come from a judgment, but judgment itself is not punishment. Now, my perspective on God, he's a loving God. And therefore, his judgments are to life, not to death. You know, the only judgment which is to death will come at the very last thing when people are judged at the great white throne for their choices. Other than that, if Jesus has taken the sin of the world, which he has, the wrath of God has already been poured out on him. There is no wrath to be poured out. So I don't see judgment being released in earthquakes and this, that, the other natural disasters and all that stuff. I'm not saying that those things aren't coming from the enemy, because sometimes they are, and sometimes they come out from the ground crying out. Sometimes they come out from the fact that there are powers that are operating in the atmosphere and in the earth which are not godly. But that's not God. Now, that doesn't mean that God, in his grace, mercy, and love, cannot use what the enemy's plans are to bring good out of them. And that's what he does. You know, all things work together for good for those that are love God and are called according to his purpose. So God can even take a disaster, and even when we make a disaster in our own lives, we can still see that redeemed if we're willing to run to God and embrace him as a loving father, not try and hide in the bushes and cover it up. So in reality, I don't personally believe that God brings wrath onto a person or a nation or anything else. You know, there may be things that a nation or a person does that has consequences that are outworked, but that doesn't, for me, it's not coming from God. So for me, judgment is, A, Jesus says don't judge, but then it says to judge. So there's obviously a difference between not judging your brother for the motives of their heart, because that judgment will come on you. Because that's what happens with judgment. It returns to you if you're not judging correctly. We're supposed to judge the body, for instance. In Corinthians, where it's talking about breaking bread, there were those who were asleep and those who were dead, you know, dead, and those who were sick, but weren't correctly judging the situation and were coming out of wrong hearts and motives. So there's consequences for wrong things, but ultimately, in terms of kingdom government, we are called to judge. We will be able to judge the angelic realm. We have to be able to make decisions. Now, it says in Peter that judgment is coming to the house of God. Judgment comes first to the household of God. Now, what does that mean? Does God come and beat us up with a big stick? No. What it means, God says, I like that, I don't like that. That's me, that isn't me. So Jesus said he came to bring a sword. He came to bring fire on the earth. He came to bring truth that would always cause a judgment. Because if you have truth, it's going to separate that which isn't true from that which is. So it's a judgment. So truth is actually God saying, this is the truth. All those who don't believe that have a choice to cross the line and accept that judgment as being correct and godly, or to carry on believing what they're believing and being on the wrong side of the line. So I honestly believe, and I believe next year is a key thing for some in the body of Christ, that judgment will start to come on the household of God, in which not punishment, not retribution, not God coming and beating people up with a stick, but judgment is coming where God says, that is me, this isn't. Follow me. You know, and therefore you do get the crino and dicrino, the two ways of judgment. I mean, in a sense, the bench of three in government is to bring judicial decisions. And so there's a judicial process to go through sometimes in bringing judgment. So you weigh up the evidence. And actually, the benches of three are supposed to do that for the church, not a court system. That's why Jesus said, don't take your brother to court. Deal with it properly in the right procedure. But there was, you know, there is a higher court that has the power of life and death. And in our situation, in if you think back into Jesus' situation, when they wanted to crucify him, the local magistrates or benches couldn't do that. They had to take it to the Sanhedrin or the court of 70, who would make a decision whether death could come. Now, for us, in a sense, death has no sting any longer. So we have the Galactic Council, who are doing judicial issues of the planet and different things, but they're there to bring righteousness and justice. So whatever decisions are made is about bringing righteousness and justice. So I personally feel that a lot of the religious system has used God's judgment to try and prove its own position. Like, you know, I do not believe God brought AIDS as a judgment on gay people. Don't believe God would ever do that. But those people who don't like gay people and see that gay people, well, that's not biblical, they can easily see, well, that's God's judgment on them because they deserve it. There's no love in that. And actually, some people glory in other people's problems because it makes them feel better and more righteous. Love doesn't operate that way. So whatever judgment comes has to come in love, because God is love. He's a loving God. So if he comes and says, this is truth, he's doing it in love. Hence, we have to speak the truth in love, because God always speaks the truth in love, never in hate or out of frustration or out of anger. He does it in love. And that is how we must view when God comes to the household of God and says, this is no longer what I'm doing. He's doing it in love because he wants people to embrace what he's doing now, not what he was doing 5 years ago, 10 years ago, or 2,000 years ago. Because there's a never-ending increase in the expansion of his government. Therefore, he begins to do progressively different things and new things. Now, you know, it's whether we're willing to submit to his judgment, to his truth. And that's the issue. And that's going to be the issue that creates warfare in the church. Those that submit to his judgment and says, yes, we agree with you, God, we're coming on this side of the line, will seemingly be in opposition to those who are saying, no, we don't agree with you, we're staying on this side of the line. Now, that religious system has always judged the true church right through history. And you can see that in every, what we would call revival or reformation, there have been those that have received new revelatory truth, and they have been opposed by those who are in existing governmental church authority rather than embracing it. Hence, we had to start again every generation or every move of God, rather than building and embracing the truth and adding that to truth and now seeing that truth in a different perspective, because now we can then embrace this from now. Because if I'm now seeing the truth as God's perspective, it will change how I see what I used to think. And I've had to do that a lot. You know, I say to people here, yeah, this is what we're believing now. It may be different next year. It may be different next week. If God gives us progressive revelation that we see this in a bigger, fuller picture and a fuller light, then we can embrace it. You know, so I think for me, I think the religious system brings judgment and it's a negative thing. I think God brings judgment and it's a good thing. It just says this is light, this is dark. Which would you rather be in, light or dark? No punishment. How can God punish that which Jesus has already died for? The sins of the whole of creation. To me, I just can't see how there can be punishment. Even in hell, there are degrees of, according to what you do. It's not all the same. You know, I've been there and seen it. You know, some people are there because of this, some people are there because of this, and how they're treated is fair and just, because justice is what God rules in. You know, so, you know, that, I don't know whether that helps or not. Personally, I need to make sure I'm not wanting vengeance, or I'm not wanting to be proved right. Because sometimes that is what earthly judgment tries to do. Heavenly judgment does not do that. It's a loving God who brings judgment so that we will accept life, not choose death. Now, we have to be prepared for this because it's coming. You know, and we have to be willing to see and discern and understand when God does this. And again, when the previous Moses generation and those who want to stay in the wilderness start accusing, kicking off, calling us this, that, and the other, we must maintain love and bless them and honor them for who they are, but not compromise. And that is why we must not succumb to the religious and political spirit and the pressure that they bring. We must know what we're called to, know who we are, and we stand firm on that. We don't need to argue. We don't need to prove ourselves. We don't need to get into warfare with anybody, but that's not to say that people won't want to get into warfare with us. And we must know how to handle the conflict and the confrontation that often brings, because the problem is when we say this is the truth, people take it as saying, well, you must be in lies then. And so they take it personally. When all we're saying is, this is the truth. We're not passing comment on what other people do or don't do. We must just maintain that this is what God has called us to do. This is the revelation that we've been given, and we're going to walk in it. We're not going to criticize or judge or tell anybody else. That's God's business. See, God brings judgment to the household of God, not us. He may use us in some ways, but not to come out and say, you're right, you're wrong. And, you know, I'm acutely aware of this because God has called me and given me a sword a number of times to draw a line by actually just saying, this is what the word of the Lord is. This is what God has said. Not saying, this is what God hasn't said. That's not my responsibility. My responsibility is to say what God has said. And for me, God is saying he's raising up a Joshua generation, and we're going to move into a place where there's a harvest coming that we have to be ready to operate in a different kingdom as a new order of Melchizedek, whatever. That is where we're going. Now, that's what I'm going to say. I'm not going to comment on those that want to do it a different way. that is their choice. I'm going to stick to what God has said. And if they want dialogue, I'll love to talk to people about this, but I'm not going to bring a judgment against what the old is. I just want to embrace the truth, really. You know, and it's a balance. You know, I had some encounters with the Ox over the last weekend because we had a series of meetings here, and I engaged the Ox and the face of the Ox, and it was just like it was an intense thing. And in engaging with that, I was given this sword, and I'm like, I've been given a sword before. It's like, okay, I'll receive it this time a lot quicker than I received the last ones, that's for sure. And then I engaged the face of the man, the priestly function, because whatever you bring with a sword has to be brought with a heart of love, has to be motivated by love, you know. And sometimes I need a big dose of love, but it's God's love, it's not mine, you know, which is why I have to maintain closeness and intimacy with God, because it's His love that flows through me. It's not something I can work up in my natural state. You know, in my natural state, I'm not very lovely, you know, but actually in terms of with God and God working through me, then His grace and mercy and love can be displayed in ways I could not do myself. I don't get it right all the time, you know, and that's why I have to repent a lot, because my motive in that, no, I need to come back to it, no, you know, but I'm reacting a lot less to situations and responding to them by taking them to God and handing all the burdens onto God and going to the throne of grace and getting grace and mercy, because I need to dish out a lot of mercy with grace to help in times of need. And that's the place to get it. Coming out of past experience and our own, it's not the place to get it. You know, it's to get fresh mercy, fresh grace, by going to the source, the throne of grace, to find that. And then again, I think, you know, your picture of when you're with God, stuff just seems to work out. When we take all our situations to the throne of grace and we hang out with God there, He's already working it out when we're hanging out with Him. Because we've come to the place where we just cast all our burdens onto Him, and His divine ability and His mercy and love can just be outworked, you know, which is pretty awesome stuff, you know. But that's the place to go. You know, keep going back to God, keep looking to Him. So, you know, anyway, this is probably as much as I've got on it.
Oh, that was good. That was good, Mike. Thank you.
Okay. You're welcome. All right. Okay. Oh, time's gone.